Hey founders, this is the SaaS Boss Show, the podcast for SaaS founders in the growth stage who want to get unstuck, build high-performing teams, and get clarity about how to build a profitable startup. Every week, I interview SaaS consultants, coaches, and experts who work with dozens of startups just like yours and share their best strategies to overcome the daily challenges of growing a profitable SaaS. My name is Natalie Luniva, and I'm a growth and leadership coach to SaaS founders, and I'm also married to a SaaS founder, and I'm so pleased that you've joined us on this conversation. And we are rolling. Hi, everyone. Today, it is my pleasure to interview Anita Toth about reducing your churn rate, what churn rate is appropriate, what exactly that we need to pay attention to, so everything to do with churn. That's going to be the first episode that we talk about that, so I'm really excited. Anita is a chief churn crusher. She helps SaaS companies to never lose another customer. Anita, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me, Natalie. I'm glad to be here.
So how did you get started working with SaaS companies?
So my background actually for 14 years was working as a research coordinator in a research institute at a university, and I was laid off when there were funding cuts. So that was 4.5 years ago. I got into an online businesses, had a Facebook ad agency, had a digital marketing agency. And through that, I met a friend who, her and I've known each other for many years now. She's a software engineer and she was building an AI platform. And I had another partner who was also a qualitative researcher like myself. And we were actually building a SaaS on her platform. And that's when I first came across the word churn and started to understand what some of the major challenges are around a SaaS business model. So my SaaS never went ahead because of a bunch of reasons, but the biggest thing I realized was I had a skill set in this qualitative research background that I could bring to help particularly SaaS companies understand more about why their customers churn in an effort to keep them longer.
So let's talk about benchmarks. What is an acceptable churn rate? And I'm sure it's different for different companies and industries.
And you're right, it is. And whether you go by annual recurring or monthly, because annual recurring tends to have a lower churn rate than monthly. So if you have like a 2% churn rate with a monthly recurring revenue, that means you've got good stickiness with the product. 5%, you're starting to get, you know, there's maybe not quite that same level of stickiness. Maybe the product market fit isn't that great, but overall, 5% is okay. You want to try to get it down as much as possible. And then anything above that is where there's some real challenges and you need to have a look and see what might be causing those. But I do want to just give a little caveat. When a company is first starting out, their churn rates are usually really high before they hit that product market fit or that inflection point. So it's not uncommon to find 10, 12, even 15% or more churn rates. So I just wanted to say that if you're very, very first starting out, that's very common. But if you've been operating for a while and your churn rates are still quite high, then it's likely indicating that there's some issues around product market fit.
And are we talking about monthly or annual churn rate?
No, so most of that I just mentioned, those, you know, 10, 15, 20 are for monthly recurring, and annual recurring will be a lot lower than that.
So 2% monthly churn rate is very good. 5% is kind of acceptable. Anything above 5% a month churn rate is bad.
Yeah, you've got it. I just want to frame this a little bit to understand why churn can be so frustrating when you're trying to deal with it. And that is because for marketing, for sales, there are tons of books, there's playbooks, there's courses, it's taught in university or colleges, but we don't have that same volume of information around churn. So I just want to put that out there because it almost feels like there's some personal failing there on the side of the founder or CRO. And that's not the case at all. Churn is difficult to deal with because there's so little information about how to do it. Yeah. And the other thing that it does is you just keep more of those customers way longer. You're not losing as many, and therefore you have compounding effects, right? So the more customers that stay, you also have what are called second order revenues. They're also more likely to refer, and they're also likely to have more positive word of mouth mentions.
What are the most often missed areas that you see that are the easiest to fix?
So the low-hanging fruit, I love this. And it is actually around what's called involuntary or delinquent churn. And what that is when credit card payments fail. It is so overlooked, and it is such a ripe opportunity because it's something that's fully in your control. So what you can do is go in, look at how people are churning there, and start looking at using, and this is actually from Patrick Campbell at ProfitWell. This is his idea of using it as a marketing channel. So you're going to test different drip campaigns to see how you can actually get people back and before they actually they've churned out, but before they've churned out for a long period of time, right? Where they've suddenly realized, oh, I don't have access anymore, and they reach out to you. So it's setting up those systems beforehand. So in-app mentions like a month before to say, hey, just to let you know, you're going to have a renewal soon. Just make sure your credit card information's up to date if that's how you do it. Or you can also send by email, you know, a few days before, a week before. Every company needs to test to see sort of which duration works best. Is it 3 days before? Is it a week before? Is it a month before for their particular customers, depending on how often they interact with your platform? So that's the one place where you can really significantly make a fast change in your churn rate.
Not just before the credit card expires, right? Or like renewal happens, but after as well. Like if you just look at how many accounts you have that whose credit card declined. And it's really interesting that for my husband, SaaS, we happened this problem a few months ago. And what I did is I actually, because the subscription is $200 a month, and you can actually take time to get those people back, to try and get those people back. So what I did is I actually placed a call to those people. Obviously, those people were no longer with the company, and that's why they actually did not return the emails. So, but they referred me, okay, there's a new marketing person here. Here's her name. I'm going to transfer you to her. Perfect. We took care of the problem right away. And within 2 days, we were able to get back more than $1,000. Everyone's trying to automate it as much as possible, but just the easiest way to do that, if you already have credit cards that are declined, just place a call to them company and see what happens.
Yep, absolutely. And it all depends, right, on the type of product you have and how much people are paying. So some will be more high touch where they can, you know, reach out. But if you have a big volume of people that you can't necessarily reach out to with a call, that's why those early in-app notifications make a big difference. Just sort of like, oh, heads up. The other thing you can do is make it seamless so that they don't have to log into their account in order to change their information. So that's why like the in-app notifications are really helpful because they're already there. And they can, it's just one less friction point to update their information and make sure that it, you know, there's a seamless transition when renewal happens.
And are there any other ones that we can just quickly right away try to fix?
So now we're getting into that sort of churn is kind of like losing weight. You have those first 10,
which is a good thing,
or a whole bunch of, you know, it goes really quickly. And then it is now a game of centimeters or inches, right? Little by little by little. So that is the first place to look. The second place, and this is where now there has to be more of an effort. If you haven't already, start segmenting your customer base and find out who your top 20% of users are and really get to know customer profile, customer avatar, whatever you want to call it. But find out what the difference is between what they do and who they are and how they interact with your platform versus those, which are the majority, who don't interact the same way, aren't as active. So it's really now starting to dig into that and starting to find out what is the difference between those two groups. And as you start to learn more about those two groups, you're going to start seeing there's going to be demographic differences, behavioral differences. What you want to do then is with your marketing, start appealing more to that 20%, your top users, right? These are your power users, and start tweaking your marketing to start attracting more of them.
And I think this is a great advice for just generally marketing and lead generation, right? Just period, because you want to take a look at your who's your ideal customer is and just attract more of that. And it's going to help with your churn, but it's going to help with so many other things as well.
Right, right. And it's really tough when you're first starting out. Again, like, you don't have all that data, but as you get more people, as you get more users, you can start then seeing what these patterns are and digging through it. So, and there's different ways to segment, right? You can segment by subscriptions. So your different plans, you can segment by, you know, this is a really big segmentation, active and inactive. And then even do your top 20% of your active users. So segmentation isn't just, you know, we segment binary and then this group or that group. There's many different ways to segment. The point is, the more you can learn about those power users and even your inactive users, why are they inactive? Does it have something to do with they didn't find value fast enough? Are they just the wrong people to begin with that were attracted? It's digging into that and start finding out what the differences are between those two groups. And
give us a couple more.
Give you a couple more. So, and it's, you said it exactly, Natalie. It was a little victory. Yes, pick up that phone. Pick up the phone. You want to talk to your different customers. So once they're segmented, and this should be done regularly. So whether it's booking an hour in your schedule once a week and designate this, is it the founder? Is it the CEO? Is it your product manager? Whoever it is, get them to designate and start reaching out. Reach out to those power users. Have conversations with them and ask a standard set of questions. So around value, around that great question, if you didn't have our software, what would you be doing instead? Like, that's one of the most powerful questions you can ask, because it really gives you an idea of how sticky the product is for them. And another question you want to ask is, what made you decide to try us? Because we know that every you know, that SaaS is becoming saturated. There's so many different platforms up and coming. Why us? What was it about us? Then you take all of that stuff that you receive and you look at it and you start evaluating, and then goes back into the marketing, right? So that you are then, again, trying to attract more of the right users and less of the ones that just aren't a good fit for your platform.
Is there an ideal time for us to ask this question? Besides when it's kind of, you know, too late and you need to fix your churn?
There is. So onboarding, right? Especially if they're brand new, you want to ask them within the first day or so, or even earlier, depending again on your whole onboarding process. But ask those questions, because it really gives you an idea then of why they made the decision. If they've been a customer for, you know, 6 months or 8 months, they might not really remember back why they chose your particular platform. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. But you're going to get a much more genuine or raw response, because they haven't really gone into the product yet. So that is one place, and that can be done by email, and that those can also be just in-app pop-up surveys, just quick, we're just wondering, and collecting that feedback. But then you have to do something with it. So great to collect it, but somebody has to analyze it, look at it, and start looking for patterns. And that is where you really get the value of the data you're collecting. What are the patterns you're seeing? How are people describing, you know, the value they get, or what they would have done if they didn't have your platform, or who would they have chosen? instead? What was their number two, you know, SaaS that they were looking at? So it all depends kind of on what you're trying to get at, but those are three really good questions to ask, and they're simple enough to answer and they don't take too long to answer. So people don't really mind answering, just firing off a quick, you know, one sentence answer. At least it's some sort of feedback, gives you an understanding of their thinking.
And while you're at it, maybe you can also get a case study out of that particular conversation. So dig a little bit deeper and see if you can maybe get those people to talk to you, and you can create a case study. And that's what you can really start using for your marketing and retargeting campaigns and outreach campaigns, because that's what really people care about, right? What are some results that other clients achieve with the help of your tool?
Yeah. And that is where that phone call would come in, Natalie. Reaching out to those customers, and you want those, and you want them at different stages, right? You want those, again, to better represent what those customer segments are, so that you can, again, attract the ones that you really want. And the best way to do that, it doesn't take longer than 15 minutes, but just have a standard set of questions so that you're gathering the same type of data and you can compare it across. And then, yeah, create a case study out of it. Absolutely.
I think all that it is founders sometimes procrastinate because they think that it's such a big of a task to, you know, pick up the phone and call or ask those questions. It feels very intimidating. And so just pick up the phone and give them a call and see what happens. Like, get over it.
Yeah. And I think you're right. Like, that's it. Like, at some point, all of us have to just bite the bullet and say, all right, I'm just going to do this. And I think what precedes this in asking these types of questions is because this is something so personal and there's that fear of hearing something that might be difficult. So the easiest way to get over that is to just think like as if you were like a doctor. And I how does a doctor do it? A doctor asks questions, but they don't take the answers personally. And that if you can make that little mindset switch, then it doesn't make it as this big scary task, just like for you, reaching out to those customers that had churned for your husband's business. Like you still had to take the risk and pick up the phone and you didn't know who you were talking to, but you did it. And it can be done here just as easily, especially if you do that little mindset flip where you're like, I'm just going to be like a doctor and I'm not going to have any emotional reaction to whatever I find out. This is fact finding. We're just fact finding.
All right. Any other areas that we can improve?
There's always around product. There's always around, you know, customer success has, I mean, they're right there. Customers are reaching out. Your users are reaching out. Tons of data there, but it's the same process. Somebody has to go through and look at what the common themes are, what the common issues are. And then again, how long does it take to deal with those support tickets in time? There's so many different places, but now you're getting down to sort of like the last 10 pounds of your weight loss, where it's like the most difficult and the most challenging. But that's really, once you've been at this a little more and you're refining, but the biggest areas are in the delinquent and voluntary, the segmentation, and then you can then start reaching out and speaking with your customers. If you could speak with them right from the start while you're dealing with the delinquent churn, it's even better. But make it it has to be a habit every week and keep it consistent, because it's easy to just let it fall to the side and then you're missing all that valuable data.
Cool. Are there any other questions that I didn't ask you but I should have?
I don't think so. You did really well. These were great questions. Again, the only thing I can say is, unlike marketing and sales, where there's tons of stuff out there, there's very little around churn and how to reduce churn. So just bear in mind that it's like that weight loss. You're going to have those quick wins with, you know, especially if you focus on delinquent churn. And then everything from there is a little more effort and a little more work, but it is certainly worth it.
Where can listeners know more about you and connect with you?
So I'm in two places in particular. One is on LinkedIn, so Anita Toth. And then my website is anitatoth.ca. And you can go there. I have a churn guide, actually. So it's view immediately, no email. And it takes you through this. So it actually gives you the step-by-step with the delinquent churn, finding those at-risk customers, and also how to structure and which questions to ask for those customer calls. So you can just go and check out the guide, and that's probably the easiest way to take what we've spoken about today and have it there in front of you so you can go step by step.
Awesome. Any last parting words?
You can do it. I think that's it. It feels overwhelming and it is at times, and it can be frustrating, but you can do this. That's it. You've got a great start just looking at that, those three areas with the delinquent churn, I say at risk, but also customer segmentation, and then reaching out and getting feedback. Like, that's going to really get the ball rolling quickly and get you in the habit of collecting that data and using it in your marketing to get better fitting customers to your platform.
Awesome. Anita, thank you so much. It's been fun.
Yeah. Thanks, Natalie. Appreciate it.
And that's it for this episode. For those tech founders who have a remote team, I have a question. Do you find yourself that it's much faster for you to do things by yourself than waste all of that mental energy delegating tasks to someone? And so you either don't hire anyone, or if you already have a remote team, you're guilty of doing those tasks by yourself, because there's just so much energy goes into delegating the tasks and then just managing people. Are you able to take a few days off and not be worried that your servers will go down or your support is going to blow up? What if you could work on more strategic, important things and let your team fix the bugs? If you only started building your team in the last couple of years, I guarantee that you are making lots of mistakes that hinder your growth without even realizing that. Oftentimes, you, the founder, may end up being the bottleneck to your team's success. That is definitely hard to swallow, but it's true. But also look on the bright side. This is also the easiest problem for you to fix, because you are in control of how to fix it. I'll be launching soon a program that will help tech founders improve your team performance, and as a result, remove the roadblocks to scaling your SaaS just by improving your operations and team dynamic. This is really the shortcut. To be notified when it's live, go to my website, natalieluneva.com/team. natalieluneva.com/team.